at me from the corners of his eyes. Iron Widow. I know, Chief Strategist Zhuge mutters, face blanching under his black gauze hat. Chills ice down my back. Iron Widow. I can guess the meaning. A girl who sacrifices her male partner to power up chrysalises instead of the other way around. If there's a name for this, that implies a precedent. Yet I have never, ever heard of this happening. I raise my voice. There are other girls who have done this? Sima Yi tilts his head. Well, strategist Sima, Chief Strategist Zhuge warns. His eyes flick at me. Please excuse us for a moment, Consort Wu. We'll have to consult with the sages. I bristle. The sages. The council of old, wrinkly, scholar bureaucrats who spout nothing but morals, harmony, and family values while governing Huaxia will have nothing good to say about what I've done. Chief Strategist Zhuge shakes his sleeve back to tap his wristlet, the same kind of device Yang Guan had. The screen cuts to the army's emblem, a winding and roaring homage to the yellow dragon. I flash back to the poster in Yang Guan's loft, how he vowed to take Zhou back and to find out if Qing Zhen really froze himself into stasis. I can't believe it was... Skies! It couldn't have been more than an hour ago. Huan Dun chrysalis battles don't tend to last more than 30 minutes. How has everything changed so much since then? Hey! I shout with all my might, though I still can't make much sound. Tell me about the other girls. Silence. Of course. Who am I kidding? Why would they tell me anything? The room's ghastly white walls seem to close in on me. My eyes dart left and right. I look at my hands, seeing flashes of them as green fox claws. Iron Widow. Even if that's not what I really am, even if this is just a fluke, the mere possibility of girls like that sends my heart racing and my head spinning. But what happened to them? Would the army really rather kill them than use their power? Do they honestly fear girls more than Huan Dun's? Sooner than I expect, the strategists return. The sages have made a decision, Consort Wu, Chief Strategist Zhuge says, looking almost sad. You will be partnering up with Li Shiming, pilot of the Vermilion Bird. Part 2. Way of the Bird. There is a kind of bird in the mountain, with only one wing and one eye. To take flight, it must join with another bird of the same kind. Classic of Mountains and Seas, Shan Hai Jing. Chapter 10. Iron Demon. I lie on the cement floor of a dark, cramped cell. A feeble hint of light seeps through a barred window in the heavy door. I understand the game now. It's not that girls are always worse at piloting chrysalises. It's that whenever there's a girl with a tremendously high spirit pressure, she gets shoved with a boy with an even higher one, so no male will ever be overpowered. 10,000. The number flits around and around in my head like birds on fire. An unimaginable value. One that's supposed to belong only to hyperbole. Wow, his spirit pressure must be like 10,000. Only for one boy in the past two centuries has it been literal. Li Shiming, the Iron Demon, doesn't have co-pilots. He has sacrifices. My next battle will be my execution. I curl up tighter in the scratchy, foul-smelling blanket the army tossed me. I rake my nails down my skull and squeeze as if I could crush the bone and scramble my brains and pop myself out of existence. That would be nice. Better than letting someone else have the satisfaction of doing it. My laughter flows into the shadows at random intervals. Did I actually think, even for a moment, that what I pulled off in the nine-tailed fox would matter? That they would let me live after I murdered one of their most popular and powerful pilots? I got what I wanted. I avenged Big Sister. I should have been ready to die 13 meals ago. That's my only measure of how long I've been locked in here. It could mean 13 days. I hope it does. It takes half a moon, 2 weeks, for exhausted Qi to fully recharge. That's how long pilots are rotated off duty after a battle. I don't know why I ate those meals. I should have flushed them down the toilet and let myself starve to death in protest. Yet when the first plate of stir-fried vegetables and rice came through the hatch near the bottom of the door, it took my grumbling stomach less than 30 seconds to bulldoze my determination. Iron Widow, my ass. You need to restore your qi, my brain tells itself. Restore it for what? Going against Li Shiming? Skies, am I turning into one of those girls who totter to their deaths under the delusion that they could be the 1 in 10,000 Iron Princess? That's really what you are, though. I flinch at the reminder from some deeper part of me. Yang Guan's spirit pressure was over 6,000. I overpowered him in a chrysalis. I am a princess-class pilot. It's so weird to think that's true, yet what does it matter? The army would rather send me off to die than risk my partnership with anyone less powerful than Li Shiming. No wonder we make so little progress in the war. I can't stop wondering how many people saw what I did. The army is infested with bribes from media companies. There are barely any restrictions on live streams. Maybe my grandfather caught one. He wakes up a lot during the night. It would have been like I killed Yang Guan right in front of him, a thought that never fails to tug my mouth into an open grin. But stored videos are a different matter. The Council of Sages and its government full of scholar bureaucrats have the final say on what stays on the networks. Given that I've never heard of any Iron Widow, there's a good chance they've decreed the scrubbing of all related footage, unless the media companies have pushed back. I'm bound to be hot gossip everywhere. I bet people would pay astronomical amounts to watch what happened. City people would shell out a whole day's salary to unlock a view. Rural people will pool their money and watch it in groups on someone's tablet. Only sleazy media moguls can salvage my brief legacy now. Come on, corporate greed. I snort, then a pang strikes my heart. Yizhi. His father is the biggest sleazy media mogul. There's no way Yizhi wouldn't have access to the footage. What does he think? Is he as surprised as everyone else? Is he horrified that I really am capable of murder? Is he proud of me? I wish I could tell him that Yang Guan never ended up getting what he wanted from my body. It shouldn't matter, yet I can't help wishing Yizhi knew that. I wish I could have heard his voice one last time. I lift my hand into the light from the door, which cuts through the cell in slanted shafts. Dust drifts in the dingy fluorescence. I tense my fingers so they make a clawed shadow on the wall. I've dreamed a lot of being big again, towering toward the sky, racing over the earth, reaching for the cosmos, being free from pain. I eye my torn robes, which I've thrown into a corner. I couldn't keep them near me after I realized they could be a means of escape if I had the guts. I could tie one end of the fabric around the toilet piping, the other end around my neck, and then twist until I'm gone. 13 meals now I've imagined doing this. I swear the fabric is starting to writhe like a bundle of snakes. I have heard that the brighter a snake is, the deadlier. I sit up, ready to. My bare legs brushes a coarse patch of dried blood on the floor. I jump out of my trance. Other girls have been locked in the cell. The halos of bloodstains, almost black in the shadows, tell of their miserable stays. It must creep the male guards out to no end, but I'm not scared. I'm a girl. I get it. I only wonder what those other girls did to land in here. Did they fight back too? Try to escape? reject orders to pleasure a pilot? Were any of them also Iron Widows, forcibly extinguished from history? I imagine the struggles that went down in the air around me, the voices that refused to be silenced, the hands that refused to be bound, the spirits that refused to be broken. Once again, I tear my eyes off the robes and lie down, breathing the chilly phantoms of their fury. It's hilarious. Men want us so badly for our bodies, yet hate us so much for our minds. She comes to me in a dream. "姐姐," I choke out, rushing for Big Sister with no pain in my steps. That's how I always know it's not real. Yet I can't stop myself from reaching for her, from wanting to stay here forever. Wherever she is, that's where I want to be. "Don't follow after me, Tian Tian." She caresses my face, but her fingers crumble into smoke before I can cherish their warmth. "There's nothing here. It's not a solution, not an escape. I'm not free. I'm just gone." My knees wobble and give out. I collapse, trying to hold on to her, but my hands pass through her no matter what I do. "I don't care," I sob. "Let me stay with you, please. He's dead. I killed him. I avenged you." Her eyelids droop. "And do you really think that changed anything?" "What do you mean?" I shake my head over and over. "It's one less monster in the world. And there are tens of thousands more just like him." An ache spreads through me, wringing every fiber of my soul. "So what am I supposed to do?" "Your worst, of course," she smiles. "Don't let them fool you, Tian Tian. There's more strength in you than you can imagine. Don't run away. Don't let them get what they want." Her robes turn shapeless too, like the cloudy mists that drift year-long above the rice terraces we grew up in. The mist we would imagine as different faces, animals, and objects as we huddle together in the backyard, helping each other ignore the echoing shouts in our heads and the fresh welts on our bodies. Suddenly, her hazy figure morphs into the nine-tailed fox's heroic form. Cold metal fingers grasp my face and wrench me to my feet. Burning white eyes glare into mine. "Be their nightmare, Wu Zhetian." The screech of Huindun sirens shocks me awake. I sit up in a cold sweat. The light through the door has turned red. This isn't the first time the alarms have gone off since I was locked up. Triggering new transformations in powerful chrysalises always provokes more attacks. But it's the first since Li Shiming and the Vermilion Bird have had their full 2 weeks to recharge. I flash back to the males of my family crowding around the dining table, watching that last battle of his. Funny how a memory born to be discarded can become so much more significant. Eyes on the puddle of my robes in the shadows, I rise. Pain shoots through my feet as usual, but the cold has dulled the edges of it and prevented any festering. I pick the fabric up. For a few seconds, I stare at it, kneading it. Then, instead of wrapping it around my neck and yanking, I pull it over my body. When the door shrieks open to the side, I'm right there, immediately face to face with the soldiers. They jerk back. I offer my hands with no expression, just a cock of my head. My compliance seems to unnerve them more than if I'd kicked and screamed. With suspicious eyes, they cuff my arms behind my back and drag me out. Every movement aches after being locked in a frigid cell for so long, and the pain of walking flings stars through my vision, but I don't let it show on my face. Marching boot steps, metal corridors, wailing alarms, flashing red lights, jangling elevator. The doors rattle open to the outside, letting in a flood of pale light and cool humidity. I wince from the assault on my eyes, but gasp and shudder, taking huge breaths of the fresh air. My eyes take several moments to adjust. Heavy fog has consumed the landscape, Of course, Huinduans never attack without something affecting visibility, because they don't need the visual advantage like we do. The soldiers marched me across a gridded steel docking bridge, like the one that led to the nine-tailed fox. Except this one is set so high that our heads almost brush the watchtower loft above. My jaw slips open at the sight of the vermilion bird. It's so much bigger than the fox, or even the headless warrior. Its dormant form looks like a massive ruby bird shielding itself with its wings. Its surface is so fire-type rough and wild that it actually does look feathered. The docking bridge leads to the back of its slender neck. I imagine getting in and taking actual flight, wielding the strength of the strongest chrysalis in Huaxia. Even if I die, it might not be a bad way to go. The sound of the elevator doors opening again scatters my fantasies. When I turn, my eyes snag on bright orange. Cold sweat breaks out beneath my pathetic remains of robes. An olive-green spill of soldiers spreads out ahead of the tallest, most powerfully built guy I have ever seen. His stark orange jumpsuit strains against his physique. Thick manacles bind his arms behind him. A burlap sack obscures his head. There's also a hefty collar around his neck with a chain leash attached, making me momentarily confused if this is a boy or a beast. The facts jumble in my head. Li Shiming is supposed to be 19, only a year older than me. But, of course, he is also the Iron Demon, murderer of his own family and mind devourer of every girl he has ridden with. Why wouldn't he look like this? With both hands, a soldier yanks on Li Shiming's long leash. He stumbles forward, steps booming across the bridge. The soldiers stalk at his side, pointing guns at him. My feet twitch, itching to back away. When he gets close to the chrysalis, they yank the sack from his head. I almost fail to hold back my gasp. I don't know what's more terrifying. The dark steel muzzle clamped around much of his face. The intensity in his char-black eyes, or his short hair. Hair is considered a precious gift from our parents. We are not allowed to cut it unless we renounce our family and become a monk or nun. But even those people shave it clean off. To have it short and wild like his is a physical testament to his crime, the worst in the Huaxia penal code, patricide. I knew this was coming. Yet it's my first real sight of someone like this, and it raises my hackles like I've been thrown into a wolf's den. The soldiers push him toward me. I try to back away for real now, but my own guards hold me in place, which makes the ridiculousness of the situation sink in like nothing else. They have really placed me on the same level of heinous as this guy. We stare at each other, the Iron Demon and the Iron Widow. Our arms cuffed, a crown of gun barrels around our heads, trapped among soldiers and fog and battle sounds. Or, he's not actually looking at me. His glare hasn't gotten any less intense, but it's piercing past me, not at me. Frowning, I angle myself into his line of sight. His glower swims elsewhere. Tension ripples away from me. The corners of my mouth perk up in delirious amusement. "Hey," I say, because there's a good chance I'm about to die, so why hold back? "At least have the guts to look me in the eye before you kill me." He ignores me. I twist to catch his eyes. When his head immediately turns, I do it again and again and again. "Stop!" a soldier shouts, exasperated, after I do a particularly jerky maneuver. They turn us both to the vermilion bird. Spirit metal clashes distantly through the dense fog. I can't stop looking at Li Shiming. He may be only half Rongdi, but his non-Han blood is really prominent. His face has more depth and dimension than most Han folks do. His eyes are set deep under strong brows, part of what makes his glare so intense. He wears no pilot crown. Almost all my fear is gone now, replaced with a giddy fervor. I might as well enjoy this. He's as guarded and bound as I am. What can he do? So, I arch a brow. Killed your whole family, huh? He looks farther away from me, his leash rattling. Did they deserve it? I press. He finally meets my gaze. There's no guilt, no rage, no hesitation in his eyes. Only a resolve so clear, it steals my breath away. He nods. My lips quiver. I don't know what to say except, I believe you. I don't catch his reaction before the soldiers start shouting and pushing us because of some signal they've received. Someone opens a hatch at the base of the Vermilion Bird's head. While ushering us into the cockpit, the soldiers unzip the back of Li Shiming's jumpsuit. My skin crawls at the patchwork of discolored scars across his back. I swear they look like marks from the electric prods used to subdue livestock. The soldiers tug me past him to line us up above the yin and yang seats. Keys unlock our cuffs. A new surge of fear crackles through me at the sight over my shoulder of Li Shiming shaking his unbound hands. More scars riddle his long fingers. But why am I freaking out? It's pointless to assume the worst when the worst would end in my death. I have to try. I have to fight. If I don't live, he will, and more girls will be sacrificed to him. The soldiers shove him into the spirit armor pieces on the young seat. He gives a grunt when the thin but sharp needles enter his spine. Then fire-red tea flashes in his eyes and surges across the network of meridians in his face. The armor pieces snap shut around him. My flesh goes stiff and cold as the soldiers flip aside the back of my robes and jam me into the yin seat. The familiar tickle of needles dots my spine like ice drops. Armor pieces lock me in. Li Shiming's armored arms come around me. I'm not exactly a small person, yet I feel small now. His heat, even through our armor, stifles me like the worst of summer. When I turn my head, my temple brushes against the warm metal of his muzzle. It gives me an idea. You clearly don't believe in rules, yet you let them put this on you, I whisper as the soldier's footsteps echo out of the cockpit. Don't you think that's laughable? No response. But right, muzzle. Come on, I continue. Do something different once we're in there. Let me take control. It's the only way to free us both. Someone slams the cockpit shut, plunging us into darkness. Let me take control, Li Shiming. Let me. Needles thrust into my spine. Chapter 11. Up the Sword Mountain, Down the Fire Sea. I'm tumbling down through hot air, hurtling toward a mountain of swords in a sea of fire. My body plunges through a crevasse in the swords, the blades streaking up through my vision. Blistering heat swells toward my back. My hands scramble for something to stop my fall, but grasp only blade edges. They slice into my palms in blinding blitzes of pain. I scream through the trench of swords toward a blood-red sky above. But I push harder against the agony and jam my legs into the blades as well. I know, on a visceral level, that if I fall into the sea of fire, I will lose myself and then I will never come out, like every other girl who has been here. My body grates and sputters to a stop. Swords gouging into my bones, hyperventilating, I hang on by only a few fragile points of leverage. Hot blood slips from my mangled, twitching hands. Tongues of fire lick at my back. Sweat drenches my robes and weighs down my hair. My mind lolls in the rippling heat. The other girls, why were they here? Why am I here? Why can't I remember? I have to remember. It's important. So important. Far above the jagged gap through the swords, Birds flutter madly through the sky with their wings on fire, their squawks sounding like human screams. Red sky, red birds, vermilion bird, chrysalis? What the fuck is a chrysalis? My thoughts are melting. Everything is melting. Fire melts metal. I am metal, metal dominant. That means something. It can give me power as long as I'm wearing... Yes, somewhere outside of this realm, I'm wearing a suit of armor that can grant me power. I remember what it looks like from so many army promos. The high collar and shoulder guards like flaring feathers, the massive wings, the long voluminous skirts like phoenix tails. I hate this armor. Every time it appears, it takes a girl's life. Mine is next. Unless I win. Unless I kill that boy first. Whimpers stretching into a howl, I command the armor to emerge from my body. It ruptures out of my flesh, growing from my bones. Red crystals turn inside out from my marrow, spreading on and on. I'm becoming no less than a monster, but that's okay. It takes a monster to slay a monster. Harsh crimson wings shudder and sprout out of my back. They curl tight around my chest. Then, with an explosive flap, they smack aside the swords around me. The blades collapse over each other in a tidal circle. A breath spurts out of me as I plummet, but I grit my teeth and beat the wings again and again and again, turning in the air. In gushes and whirlwinds of heat, the freakish wings carry me up. The swords descend down the size of my view before, giving way to the full scope of the realm. Through the heat-shimmered air, a distorted island floats in the bloody sky, encircled by the flaming, screaming birds. I soar toward it, wings cracking like whips. The birds come for me. I jerk to a halt, but it's too late. They crash into a unified stream and course toward me, flapping, thrashing, shrieking as they burn alive. I shield myself with my arms. A blast of hot air hits me first. Then a firestorm of frantic beaks and talons pelts me. They maim and scratch and push me lower as if killing me is the only way to save themselves. I struggle to keep moving my wings through the flock of them. Flaming feathers swarm me, choke me, roaring like 100 furnaces. A chill rattles through me when I glimpse human tongues within the birds' beaks. Violent memories tear through my mind, making something horrifically clear. None of the screams from the birds' throats are figments of imagination. The muffled cries of a young girl, coming from behind a door I approach with equal parts fear and rage. The shrieks of my own brothers as I smash a cleaver through their bodies over and over. The yowls of fellow boys in bright orange jumpsuits as I bash their faces with scabbed fists. The frustrated shouts from my own mouth as electricity shocks through my body while I lay bricks with bloody, trembling fingers. The desperate, slow-building wail of girls in the grip of soldiers as I'm escorted toward them across a docking bridge. How could a single person have heard this many breeds of screams? It's not even all of it. There's more, so much more, too much to endure. Countless sounds and memories bombard me through the birds, raking into my soul, urging me to dive headfirst into the sea of fire to put myself out of this misery. But why should I? These memories aren't mine. They can't be. I would not be sane if this were my life. I don't have to live with this. As long as I kill him, I'll be free. With a scream of my own, I wrestle through the birds and keep soaring toward the island. When I finally touch down, he's there, the boy I must kill, sitting on the edge wearing a soot-gray robe. I don't remember who he is, but something about his long hair, half tied up with a crimson rag, gives me pause. It doesn't seem right. But I stalk up to him anyway, because it's either him or me. Only one can live. I don't know what to do, he says, without looking over his shoulder at me. His voice, smooth and rumbling from deep in his chest, hits me with a physical force. Waves of grief and tenderness double me over, demanding me to comfort him. Do about what? I say in a soft voice that sounds nothing like my own. Everything. Ripples of visible heat lift his long hair above his shoulders, exposing his neck, splashed with horrid scars. It's all wrong. Can't you fix it? I don't know how. Anger roils through my stupor. This conversation is pointless. Only one can live. I can't fix anything, he goes on. I only know how to destroy. Then die. I stomp forth and shove him over the edge. Gray robes billow out like smoke. I catch a flash of char-black eyes as he turns in mid-air. Unexpectedly, the sea of fire roars up through the whole realm. Flames consume the sky, shattering the floating island with me on it. My eyes spring open. I come face to face with Li Shiming in the Yin Yang realm, memories flying back to me. I waste no time. I wrench a dagger out of my armor and lunge for his throat. He trips in surprise, and we both topple, crashing hard on the Yin Yang border. An unbelievable heat surges from him. I keep stabbing while mentally feeling around for the vermilion bird's presence. The blade melts into a stump. My heart plummets. A clearer look at him quakes me. His chi is conducting at maximum intensity, igniting his eyes and glowing under his skin like volcanic veins. His armor is lit from within like a crackling ember. I drop the ruined dagger and wrap my hands around his throat. His hands shoot around my throat as well, and he heaves me to the ground, reversing our positions. His scarlet eyes and the blazing meridians in his face waver above me, horrid and ferocious. This is a duel of minds, I remind myself. There's nothing to be scared of. He may be incomparably stronger than me in real life, but that doesn't mean anything here. I smack my forehead into his, then hurl him over to pin him down again. He will not kill me. He does not get to make me a statistic. My advantage doesn't last long, but I don't let him gain any either. We grapple along the yin-yang border in a chaotic back and forth, unable to overpower each other. I try to seize control of the bird the way I did the fox, but Li Shiming's mind is so strong that I can't shove it down. Even when part of my consciousness strains into the bird's colossal presence, gathering some sensations of the real world and flapping one of its wings, I can't divorce myself from the yin-yang realm. It pulls at me, trying to drag my awareness back in. My mind aches, like it's being stretched in two directions, two viewpoints, two realities. My control of the bird feels as flimsy as a drawn breath that could collapse any second. In my shaky, nauseating view through the bird's eyes, a metal-type Huinduan pounces out of the fog in a gleam of white. Its body smashes into the stem of the bird's claws, making us stumble. The world swings. My senses gyrate like I've been thrown into a windstorm, tethered by only a thin thread to the bird. I hold on desperately, trying to smack the Huinduan away with the one wing I can move, but Li Shiming does the same with the other wing, and the discordance makes the bird flap and stagger aimlessly. Back down, some traitorous part of me begs. Let him handle it. No! The rest of me screams back. I cannot give up the control I've gained. I don't care if it kills us both. As our spirit forms tumble through the yin-yang realm, we simultaneously build up chi blasts in the bird's beak. It's the only thing we're doing in common, but we have no coordination when releasing the blasts. Streaks of chi sputter disjointly out of the bird's beak, some as powerful as roars, some as tiny as spurts. It's a miracle when the Huinduan actually splatters apart in bright sparks through the dense fog. Vermilion bird, you're out of control! We both give nothing but a throttled howl in response. Our frustrations clash and collide, tangling up, choking our minds tighter and tighter. Heat and pressure crest to a peak in the bird's chest, but it doesn't feel promising like when the fox transformed. It just feels like everything is about to explode. Chapter 12. For the first time. Warm blood from my nostrils pricks me awake. My mind sways like it's being expelled out of a deep underwater storm. I want to wipe my nose but can't summon the strength to move my arms. Two shafts of foggy white light lance through the darkness. Everything smells like metal. Did I fall asleep in the tool shed? Why would I? A mask shifts behind me. Chains rattle. My drooping eyes widen. The facts of reality crash back to me, but they don't make sense. My hands lie on the Ying seat's armrests, released from the armor. No cold corpse fingers between them. A zipper purrs closed. Behind me, Li Shiming rises and steps out, knee scuffing my shoulders. He lived? And so did I? What? How? Did we finish the battle? Wasn't one of us supposed to kill the other? It hurts to think, so I stop. His heavy steps clang toward the cockpit hatch, accompanied by a rhythmic jangling of his chains. Blood continues to trickle from my nose, pooling between my lips, tasting like iron. Words fight their way out of my throat. Hey, I finally manage to murmur. My voice comes out husky like I've actually been choked. His next footfall lands with a particularly loud ring. Silence. My tattered robes rustle as I pivot to look over my shoulder. His orange jumpsuit glares through a frail white mist, sighing down from two new holes in the cockpit where the command speakers must have been. Several heartbeats thump by. He's still facing the hatch, not moving, as if afraid to believe what he just heard. Hey, I utter again. Slowly, he turns back, leash swishing over his jumpsuit. His eyes bloom wide over his muzzle and collar, watering, glistening in the lucent vapor, as if he's lived his whole life in black and white and is only now seeing color for the first time. A laugh tumbles out of me. I wipe the blood from my nose. Surprise! He staggers back toward me, steps lighter than before. My smirk fades. The raw tenderness in his gaze transfixes me. It's heart-stopping, seeing and feeling an emotion that's not some variant of anger from a boy like him. I have to remind myself that those are the same vicious, red-lit eyes that glared at me with bloodlust in the mind link. He is not innocent. Not framed, not misunderstood. I know that for certain. I have lived through the burning, screaming depths of his mind. Yet I can't look away. Without really being sure why I'm doing it, I unfurl my arm over the back of my seat, offering him my hand. When he takes it, a startling shiver in his bones travels into mine, humming deep into me and taking root. Our fingers curl together, much gentler than when we were trying to take each other's lives. Chapter 13. Hua Xia's Best Hope. Well, Sima Yi says on the big screen in the white comm room, hands on his hips. This is an interesting development. There's a grating click as a soldier in my periphery unlocks Li Shiming's muzzle. It drags off his face, leaving a trace of flushed, dented marks amidst his remarkably dense stubble, denser than anything I've seen Han men grow. A criminal tattoo of the character for prisoner, like a person in a cage, becomes uncovered on his cheek. My stomach turns at its raised, unsteady lines, clearly carved by a dull knife. In a flash of orange, he snatches the soldier by his uniform collar. I jump. Another soldier yelps a warning, raising his gun. Protests spurt from the strategists on the screen. But Li Shiming just extends his other hand in a demanding gesture. A third soldier rushes a metal flask into his grip. Only then does he release the first soldier with a harsh shove. He unscrews the flask and swigs it like it's the first fresh water he's found after months of drought. Eyes wide and heart slamming against my ribs, I watch the hypnotic bobble of his throat, the tendons working in his neck, and the shining lines of liquor leaking into his heavy steel collar. The thrill of survival must have made me delirious in the cockpit. There's really nothing to celebrate about us both making it out alive. It doesn't matter that I've done the unthinkable yet again. It wasn't good enough. I have failed to kill Li Shiming. Now, it'll be at least 2 weeks before I can battle him again, in that liberating realm where the only power that matters is in the mind. 2 weeks, I'll be confined to this useless mortal body, at the mercy of whatever the army decides to do with me. Sima Yi sighs from the screen speakers, his crooked mouth making it hard to tell if he's amused or exasperated. Take it easy there, Shiming. The flask sloshes as Li Shiming finally lowers it. He catches his breath between hoarse coughs, massaging his stubbled jaw. His chest heaves deeply. The sharp, dreadful, and familiar smell of alcohol stabs up my nostrils. I recoil, shielding my nose with one arm while holding my torn robes together with the other. Memories tear out of the depths of my mind. Memories of bottles smashing into glittering pieces around the house as my grandfather slurs out insults. The crack of his palm against my grandmother's face. My father sitting outside, taking long drags of his pipe, unable to do anything against an elder of the family. The cuts in my sister's, my mother's, and my hands as we're forced to clean up the messes. Li Shiming's gaze skims mine from the corner of his eyes. He does a double take and stiffens, as if I've caught him licking a wound. Awkwardly, and pointless to a level I can't understand, he shifts the flask to his side, hiding it from my view. An eerie glare beside him catches my eye. With a start, I realize the soldiers are united with him in staring at me, faces pale and rigid. The strategists, too. They're watching me, observing, as if I'm a dangerous, volatile creature they've barely managed to corner. I lower my arms, unclench my fists, relax my brows. I'd been glowering. My awareness shrinks around myself, around my frost-brittle skin and the aching flesh and bone it contains. The pain in my feet tells me this isn't a dream or reverie. I'd been stewing in isolation for so long that I've begun to lose track of the boundaries of possible and impossible, normal and abnormal. But no, murdering a Prince-class pilot with my mind is not normal. Surviving Li Shiming, who's got the biggest spirit pressure since Qing fucking Zhen himself, is not normal. It's no wonder they're looking at me like this. That's hilarious. Though my pulse keeps pounding at my temples and jumping in my neck, I pinch back a bout of laughter. Their unease must have transformed me into something more than what I am in their eyes. Even though I'm as powerless as ever outside of a chrysalis, and they have no reason to fear me in this moment, here they are, with those delicious expressions. This could actually protect me. I roll with it. Play it up. So what happened? I leer at the strategist as if I've known what would unfold since the beginning, and now I'm taunting them. You got any idea why I'm still alive? The strategists exchange a weighted look. Pilot Lee, did you experience anything different during this battle? Chief Strategist Zhuge waves his feather fan stiffly. Wow, just Pilot Lee. He really doesn't have any fancy titles, even among army folk themselves. Li Shiming clears his throat, focus darting between me and the strategists. Her mind was loud, he says, voice rusty from disuse. How strange that I heard his voice in his mind realm before I did in real life. The syllables resonate from the bottom of his chest, raising the hairs that are starting to grow out of my arms again. He tells of his memories of fighting me within the yin-yang realm. Apparently, he's never been so conscious during a battle, which is saying something considering he was trying to kill me the whole time. Well, I tried to kill him first, but who knows what would have happened if I hadn't. His eyes keep straying to me while he speaks, narrowing and sharpening like daggers, until he cuts himself off with, "Who is she?" "Were you not told?" Sima Yi speaks up. "She's Wu Zetian, the girl who killed Prince Colonel Yang." The tension between Li Shiming's brows snaps loose. "Yang Guan's dead?" Sima Yi's face screws up. "How did you miss a funeral that big right in your stretch of the wall? Is that bastard An Lu Shan keeping you cooped up again?" My very soul jolts at the mention of Yang Guan's funeral. They didn't tell me anything about it either. I need to find out more. How have the masses reacted to it? Reacted to me? "A funeral?" I say with mock casualness. "Did the attendees know he died like a girl?" A collective look of alarm presses in on me again. "What in the skies is wrong with you?" Sima Yi cries with a lash of his arm. "Haven't you realized what you've done? You killed a human being. You ended a life. You took someone's son away from them." My grin stiffens. Not because I feel a single twinge of regret, but because my rage has boiled over so fast that I have to tense my everything to contain it. "Yeah," I say with bulging eyes. "I sure did." "You!" His face strains red. I could fire back with how people's daughters die in chrysalises all the time, but I don't want to put any effort into justifying myself. I know his outburst is coming more out of his unease about me than any degree of empathy. He sure wasn't this devastated during our first chat, right after Yang Guan's death. No, he's trying to worm into my mind and shackle me down with morals so he can feel more comfortable about my existence. Too bad. I am exactly the kind of ice-blooded, rotten-hearted girl he fears I am. And I am fine with that. May he stay unsettled. He looks about to yell at me some more, but Chief Strategist Zhuge silences him with a weary wave of his fan. "Let's not venture too far from the matter at hand, shall we?" As Sima Yi fumes, Chief Strategist Zhuge goes back to teasing information out of me and Li Shiming. I give my answers begrudgingly. Neither of us remember the battle climax. After getting nothing but confusion from us at his mention of our strange transformation, Chief Strategist Zhuge shows us a video. The footage opens in a corner of the big screen, showing the vermilion bird in partial patches through fog. The bird throws its head back, charging a ping qi blast in its beak. Must be a mixture of my metal white and Li Shiming's fire red. Then spews it at a Hun Dun. The Hun Dun stumbles into the fog, missing half its body. But instead of moving on to the next enemy, the bird wobbles blindly on its claws, wings flapping out of sync. It shakes its head violently. Black specks fly out. "Those are the speakers, by the way," Sima Yi points down at the video. speakers that engineers worked hard to wire in. Before I can pointedly refuse to apologize, white radiance splinters the bird's feather-like roughness. Spirit metal bursts and expands in lurching spurts, except the bird doesn't turn more humanoid, like higher forms should be. It fails to achieve any particular shape. Its body bloats like a red boil, spewing out metal white pus. Some earth yellow comes out too, but does nothing to stabilize the transformation. The bird becomes a diseased-looking creature as formless as a Hunduin. Its wings crumble and melt into its lumpy body. Its claws swell to fat stumps. My hand flies to my mouth. I was definitely not conscious during this.
There are clearly two types of transmutive qi at work here.
Chief strategist Zhuge strokes his long, wispy beard with his fan.
However, we are hesitant to call it a proper level 3 transformation.
Yeah, nothing heroic about it, Sima Yi rolls his eyes.
It's more like a villainous form. Every male pilot that connects to a chrysalis is in danger of losing his rationality to it,
Chief Strategist Zhuge adds.
The presence of the female pilot is meant to soothe his subconscious and keep him sane. However, you two, you both lost all capacity for rational thought.
And gee, do I wonder why? Sima Yi glares at me. The video ends with the bird hurtling right at the camera drone, one eye red and one eye white. My head lifts with a creaky motion. So what does this mean? Are we a balanced match?
No, Chief Strategist Zhuge says. That is the only thing we know for sure. Judging by the data transmitted from the vermilion bird, your hearts did not beat in sync.
Then how are we both transforming the bird at the same time?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Sima Yi peers at Chief Strategist Zhuge, who waves his fan harder.
Our tentative hypothesis is that you both have a very, very rare type of hyper-adaptive spirit,
Chief Strategist Zhuge says.
You could match each other's spirit pressures no matter how they spiked, but as a result, neither of you could assume dominant command, so your chrysalis deformed under the equal yet discordant signals.
Equal. Does that mean my spirit pressure hit 10,000? I gape. Something about putting this into tangible numbers shocks me all over again.
Try 18,000,
Sima Yi says, like an accusation.
That's the highest transient reading we've got from the two of you.
Shivers sweep up my back and shake my shoulders. The soldiers sneak bewildered looks at each other. Even Li Shiming's head snaps up. I breathe in and out through my mouth, trying to wrap my mind around the number. It's so big, it's almost senseless. 18,000, when the average is 84.
How?
I shake my head absently. Something brightens in Chief Strategist Zhuge's eyes.
Although you are not a balanced match, you are truly an extraordinary pair. If you could achieve a stable bond, it could change the dynamics of the entire war. You could indeed have the power to liberate the Zhou province. The Emperor-class Hunduin defending the replication nest in the Kunlun Mountains is metal type. Given that metal is weak to fire, a proper heroic form in the vermilion bird would be Hua Xia's best hope for defeating it. It sounds like there is plenty of room for improvement in your synergy, which is excellent. In your next battle, could you perhaps try not being hostile toward each other? A cross between a snort and a scoff rips out of me. Me, Li Shiming, an assassin, a murderer, Hua Xia's best hope, not hostile? And what would you give me for trying? I purr. At least every privilege a non-criminal boy with my spirit pressure would have, right? Sima Yi makes a noise of disgust. Sweetie, you are in no position to make demands. You should be thanking your ancestors that we are keeping you alive at all. I glare at him for a long moment. Then I lumber toward the nearest soldier. Hey! The soldier raises his gun. I don't stop. I don't blink. Not when adrenaline crashes through me and sets off my nerves like wind sirens. Not when other soldiers lurch into motion. Not when his finger meets the trigger. I push my skull right up against the barrel. Shouts muffle through the roar of blood in my ears. Sima Yi blurting out curses. Chief strategist Zhuge shouting, "Don't shoot!" "Go ahead," I say, cold as the metal circle burning into my forehead. The barrel doubles in my view. My pulse climbs into my throat, thrumming so hard and fast I can hardly hear my own voice. I could die. I could really die with one twitch of the soldier's finger, bang, and then nothing. But if I don't detach myself from this fear, they will pummel me with it, choke me with it, enslave me with it. What would be the point of sticking around then? I actually feel a rush of disappointment when the soldier's finger leaps off the trigger. The instant the cold circle leaves my forehead, a surge of madness makes me seize the gun with both hands and grapple it back. Its sullen metal, chilling my palms, becomes the only constant in my frenzy of thoughts and sensations. The muzzle wobbles in my view, a gaping black hollow that could suck me in and end me. "You think this scares me?" I say, unbelievably calm for how rapidly I'm fraying apart on the inside. "You think I ever liked being alive? Go ahead. Do me a favor." The other soldiers wrench me away. After a brief struggle, one clamps my arms firmly behind me. But I think I've made my point. I catch a glimpse of Li Shiming's stupefied expression and hold back a satisfied grin. It feels good, unnerving a boy as powerful as him. "If you want something from me, you better pay what I'm due," I yell to the strategist with a cock of my head. The tangled mess of my hair drapes over my cheek and across my throat. "Consort Wu," Chief Strategist Zhuge says, much more cautious than before. "It's not that we wish to deprive you of anything. It's that the situation is more precarious than you think. Truth be told, there is much division among us strategists on how to handle you." "Yeah, we're not the ones who want you dead, you unhinged bitch," Sima Yi says, sounding winded. "Explain," I demand. Chief Strategist Zhuge sighs. "To be honest, there have been certain rumors claiming that you are, how should I say this? A fox spirit. The spirit of an actual nine-tailed fox, possessing the body of a beautiful girl in order to devour men." "What?" I nearly burst out laughing, but judging by the tense looks on the strategists' faces, even their educated minds, which should know that spirits only do stuff like that in legends and that nine-tailed foxes are normal animals, are finding it difficult to entirely dismiss the idea. "Oh?" I simply say. "What gave them that idea?" Sima Yi lashes a dirty look onto me. "Do you not remember how you acted when you came out of the fox?" I flash back to me dumping Yang Guan's body at my feet and laughing maniacally.
Oh, did the sages not order that footage removed?
They did, but too many people saw the live stream. Skies know why they were up that early, but by morning, the rumors were everywhere. Trying to remove the footage just made it worse. Ay-ya. Why on earth was doing that your first impulse after finding a boy dead?
I shrug. Sorry. I got caught up in the moment. It happens.
Sima Yi scowls like he wants to tear my arms off. Listen, not so little girl. Your existence is making people question the army's integrity. There is something messed up with you in the head, and everyone can see it. The only reason you're still alive is because Chief Strategist Zhuge and I are willing to look at the bigger picture and not give up on your potential. Though I'm really starting to regret it. So if you want any privileges, you better prove you can work well with Shi Ming.
His tone may be nasty, but my mind hitches on the confirmation that real pilot privileges are a possibility for me. At last, we're getting somewhere.
And what exactly does all of this entail?
I squint. What would I need to do before the next battle?
Well, Chief Strategist Zhuge says, we are still negotiating the training arrangements with the Shui Tan strategists. But at the very least, he beams at Li Shiming, you'll be gaining a roommate, Pilot Li.
My gut ices over. I'm not going back to the prison cell?
Of course not. We are hoping that you could become like husband and wife, after all. A responsible husband disciplines his wife when she missteps, and a noble wife guides her husband when he wanders astray. Such is the natural balancing order of the world, Pilot Li, Consort Wu. We believe that together you can be something better.
I finally fail to hold back my laughter. Chief Strategist Zhuge furrows his brow in confusion. Oh, he's dead serious. Terror streaks through me. My awareness slashes to Li Shiming, who's taking another swig from the flask. They want me to live with this murderer. This convicted murderer who needs to be muzzled, collared, and held at gunpoint to be forced into cooperation while sober. What in the skies will he be like once the alcohol kicks in? Chapter 14. The Lies Boys Tell. A concentrated smell of grain liquor smacks me in the face when the soldiers pry open the heavy steel door to Li Shiming's quarters. I stumble back into the underground hallway, dim with only night lights, but a soldier seizes my arm. Another reaches past the door and flips a switch. A grimy, caged bulb blinks awake on the ceiling, revealing a room like nothing I expected for the most powerful pilot in Huaxia. Just a tiny concrete bunker. I knew it wasn't going to be a lavish loft like Yangguang's when the elevator went down instead of up, but this is basically a prison cell with some furnishings. Li Shiming staggers in through a narrow space between the bed and concrete wall, one hand braced on the wall, as unsteady as a girl thanks to the liquor in his blood. He's not built for this place. His short, wild hair almost brushes the caged ceiling bulb. In the corner, on the floor, is a neat formation of flasks, identical to the one in his hand, which I've seen the soldiers refill for him at least 4 times so far. They probably don't trust him and the damage he could do with a glass bottle. Though I have no idea why they would go out of their way to let him drink at all. Well, for tonight, I know why. Pain pulses through my arm as the soldier crushes it harder and tosses me into the bunker. When Li Shiming turns around, another shove heaves into my back, making me stumble forward and collide with his chest. His flask sloshes in his hand. I tense against the stunning solidity of him, cheeks flashing hot, hands curling on the rough fabric of his jumpsuit. The soldiers burst into laughter, cackling and hooting like children. Though the blush scorches all the way into my ears, I resist the urge to flounder away from Li Shiming. That's what they want to see. Me, flustered and panicked. A state of female being that makes sense to them, that comforts them. Their jeers muffle beneath the crash of the door. The squeal and jangle of them bolting it from the outside echo like hammer strikes on my ribcage. I stop breathing. Li Shiming does not have concubine privileges. Wherever the girl sacrificed to him came from, they were never his to enjoy. I am the first girl he's seen outside of a battle in 2 years. His muscles remain taut under my palm, feverish hot with alcohol. His heart thrashes like something fighting to burst from a prison. My breaths quicken into short spurts that I have to harden my stomach to control. I have no delusions about being able to fight him off. I won't try. It only let him know that my will is powerless against his strength. There's no way to keep my dignity except to act like he's not capable of taking mine away, no matter what he does to me. And in the end, isn't that all dignity is? The boundaries and values you decide for yourself? I know what matters most to me, and it has nothing to do with any semblance of purity. I will not make myself small and crumple into a sad creature of fear that lives to please Li Shiming in hopes of earning his mercy. Despite the fear racking through me, I raise my head. It takes all my discipline not to shudder at the black intensity of his eyes, like spots charred into my vision by staring directly at the sun. The murky light of the cage bulb near his head casts a shadow under every prominent angle of his face. My focus bounces to the ghastly prisoner tattoo on his cheek, but I jerk it back to his eyes. I stare coolly into them, conveying a silent threat that he can't watch his back forever. The caged ball buzzes above us. His arms shift. I brace myself. But his hands don't land on me. Instead, he drops his flask on the bed. Then slowly, he pivots to sit down. His leash clatters into his lap. Shadows peel away from his face, revealing an expression that's almost awkward. He raises his hands in defense. My brows twitch in shock. "Listen," he says, the edges of his syllables melting from the heat inside him. I won't make you do anything you don't want to do. I know this. He side-eyes the flasks in the corner. All of this looks bad. Really bad. And you won't believe me, but I won't hurt you. You have my word. He hiccups, then shields his mouth with the back of his hand. Sorry. A wrongness crawls up my skin like common class Huinduins. This cannot be the boy with fire and swords for a mind. I was in there. He knows it. I'm the first person who's lived to tell of his mind realm. He was there when I described it to the strategists. So who does he think he's fooling? I have a spare jumpsuit. He continues to speak as if I've got him at gunpoint, even though he never acted like this while at actual gunpoint. He opens a drawer in the metallic base of the bed while keeping one hand up. He fishes out a heap of neon orange and offers it to me. The glaring color of the fabric scorches into my eyes, too bright to seem real. You can change in the lavatory. He points to a rectangular metal booth beyond the foot of the bed. There are also some things under the sink that you could use. My heart skitters. A space where I could be somewhat alone. Yes, please. I snatch the jumpsuit and blunder for it as fast as I can, hand braced against the wall. I give my feet a much-needed soak with a tin bucket and a bunch of medicinal herbs I found in the cabinet under the sink. Using the bone-chilling water from the tap is probably doing nothing good for my tea flow, but hot water has become a distant dream. I'm not sure what it feels like anymore, if anything that soothing ever existed. It's hard keeping grip on reality after everything that's happened. I watch my cold, numbed hands scrub my feet wrappings through the gap between my knees, slipping in and out of the awareness that I'm the one making the motions happen. Water drops make hypnotizing ripples in the bucket, buoying the herbs. The cloth is filthy with dried blood and suspicious yellow ooze. I plan on tearing my discarded robes into new wrappings while these dried, but to my surprise, there were also fresh wrappings in the cabinet. And pouches of wood ash, the kind used to soak up monthly bleedings. I have no idea why Li Shiming would have this stuff when he's never had concubine privileges. Maybe they're left over from a girl who used to be held here. She must be dead now, like I should have been, 13 days ago. I scrub until my fingers chafe and blister, yet not even that can fully convince me I'm alive, that I've lived through all that I have, that I'm not still lying in the darkness of my original cell, going finally and utterly mad. That Li Shiming promised not to hurt me when the army practically deployed him as a weapon to pin me down and remind me that I was born to please and serve, not to murder and defy. It makes no sense. If he were capable of self-control, he wouldn't be a drunkard and a murderer. So why is he acting like this? What game is he trying to play? I've got half a mind to stay in the lavatory until the Hunduan somehow breach the wall and crush us all into paste, but eventually a crisp knock startles at the door.
"You okay in there?"
comes Li Shiming's muffled voice. "Fine." I go from clawing my hair to knotting my fingers near my chest.
"Well, lights are going out in 10 minutes. Will be dark. Real dark. Would be hard to move around. Thought you should know."
"Okay, fine." Looks like I have no choice but to finish up my soak and leave. When I emerge, my feet newly wrapped, Li Shiming wobbles off the edge of the bed, nursing a flask with both hands. We gawk at each other across the narrow space.
"You can," he gestures at the bed, gaze sliding around mine. "I'll sleep on the floor."
Discomfort wrings me tight. I can't shake the feeling that this is a trap.
"No, it's fine." I keep my tone flat. "I've never even slept in a proper bed before. I'll take the floor."
His mouth parts in surprise. Then a sternness hardens his expression.
"I can't let you do that."
A visceral anger flares from my core.
"You do not get to decide things for me." "No, I'm deciding for myself."
He bends to toss every loitering flask into a drawer under the bed, then backs against a wall and sinks to the concrete. He barely fits in the space, his shoulders pressed in by the bed frame and the bunker wall. I bite the inside of my cheek. I'm tempted to demand he get back on the bed, but the argument surging up my throat gives me pause. "Don't be ridiculous, it's your room," I nearly said. Except it's not. It's my room now, too. So why should I insist on being the uncomfortable one?
"All right, suit yourself."
I crawl onto the mattress. I don't thank him.
That would be acknowledging he's doing me some sort of favor.
If his agenda is to make me emotionally owe him for something I never asked for, he'll learn his lesson real fast. His spare jumpsuit overwhelms my body like rich people robes, though I doubt rich people ever land on death row. Now I know how Yi Zhi feels when trying to do anything in those overblown designer robes of his. A pang spears my heart at the thought of him. My fingers crimp like spider legs on the bed. Did he watch the battle today? Did he know I was ordered into the Vermilion Burned? The strategists waved off all my attempts at finding out what the masses have been told about me. As I settle down, folding my legs, I catch Li Shiming staring intently at his flask, eyes shifting. His finger glides along the metal.
I frown. What are you doing?
I'm reading, he says, face seizing up halfway through, as if realizing how absurd it sounds as he says it. But I lean to get a closer look at the flask. I can't find a single character on it.
I, used to have the four classics, he says. You know, Outlaws of the Hwindwin Wilds, Dream of the Red Watchtower, Romance of the Three Provinces, Journey to the Western Stronghold. I read them so many times, I memorized them. If I pretend hard enough, I can read them all over again.
Okay, so Li Shiming is absolutely fucking bonkers, I guess. There's so much to unpack about this that I just bat my eyelids and remark, you can read full books?
Han script is made of thousands of complicated characters like individual drawings. Only educated people like Yi Zhi can read and write things beyond casual postings. Li Shiming raises his gaze with a weary look.
Yes, I've gone to school. They let you when the Rongdi blood is from your mother's side, not your father's.
Was she Tujue, or Xiangbei, or Qiang? I squint, failing to figure it out by his looks alone. The heaviness loosens from his eyes.
You actually know the different tribes?
I'm a frontier girl, I shrug. There are lots of Rongdi in my village. They don't like it when you get them mixed up. Usually I can tell by name or clothing, but, well.
He huffs, chin lifting, whole demeanor lightening. I'm Xiangbei. Don't know much about the customs, though, and only speak a bit of the language. Mother passed away when I was little. He examines his scarred muscular arm. Wish she could have taught me more.
My mind sways, churned by a dissonance between the invincible, nightmare concept of Li Shiming, the Iron Demon, and this boy below me, who's awkwardly squeezed between a bed and a wall, talking about his mother. It's true that the most powerful pilots come from the most unexpected backgrounds. There's no way to predict where the next astonishing spirit pressure will pop up. Qing Jin himself was the son of a prostitute and grew up in a brothel with no idea who his father was. But I cannot imagine Li Shiming as a little kid. Did he cry when his mother died? Did his father and brothers try to comfort him with no idea they would meet their own end at his hand? As they went about their lives as a family day after day, did they ever catch an inkling of what he would be capable of? Or what were they capable of to make him snap that hard? I want to ask, but the question catches in my throat like a fishbone.
Right. Why should I care?
So what happened to your books? I say instead. It would have been nice to have snatched one of them to distract myself, even though I can't read that well. He flashes a guilty look.
I made a shiv with the pages and stabbed two soldiers with it.
My mouth hangs open. And why did you do that? I say after a long lapse.
They were taking me to battle. I didn't want to go.
He shakes his flask next to his ear. His eyes are dull and distant, glazed. Then he wedges open the drawer, unscrews a new flask from it, and takes several hard gulps. You don't like going into battle? I say. He falls still with his mouth over the flask opening.
Do you think that just because I'm a murderer, I like sacrificing girls?
An acrid tide of feeling rolls through me.
I don't know. The other pilots sure seem like they do.
That's not true. That can't be true. His voice shakes on top of his slurring.
Nobody could enjoy that. We can feel them die, you know. And their last fears, their memories, their dreams.
None of you care about any of that.
We're led to believe we're not allowed to care. There's a difference.
He meets my eyes in a way he refused to do before our battle.
My stomach twists, squeezing bile up my throat. This is the first time I've heard a male pilot express any hint of guilt for what they do. But instead of feeling better about him, I'm more agitated. It disturbs me in a whole new way, because it makes no sense. How could he, of all people, care about the girls when no one else does?
I could ask for the books again.
He suddenly changes the topic, seeming to sense the warring emotions in me.
It's been a while. They might grant them to me.
I could teach you how to read, if you want. I flush.
Please, I know how to read too.
He makes an expression that I assume was my exact one moments earlier.
I thought you said you were a frontier girl.
Yeah, but I knew a city boy. He taught me. I smirk at the confusion that furrows Li Shiming's features until he says,
Where is this boy now?
My grin wilts. Chang'an, I guess. I shrug.
He didn't care that you were going to enlist?
He did. I tense my neck to keep my voice from wobbling. It just didn't matter, because I chose this for myself.
Oh, poor guy.
I swallow the impulse to justify myself. I don't need to. I shouldn't need to. I'd made my choice and achieved my goal. That's the only thing that ever mattered. Before I have to respond, the electricity goes out. Darkness and silence plunge down. It wasn't just a ceiling bulb. Whatever machinery and wiring are in the walls have stopped operating as well. The utter darkness sends a scribble of fear into me, but I clamp it down. What's the point of being afraid?